Hey, everybody, check it out. Episode number 12 is in the books. You got to give this a listen. It is the man, the myth, the modern day legend, Eric Gorges from A Craftsman's Legacy. This is a must listen. So check it out.
Okay, everybody. I just want to start this off. This is episode number 12. I can't believe it's number 12. I just got off of my review, yearly review with my boss, and she goes, how many shop talks are you going to plan on doing? I go, about 25 this year. She freaked out. So I'm really excited, and I've been waiting for this, like I mentioned. Everybody, I'm going to introduce this gentleman. I think most of you probably know him. His name is Eric Gorges. remember when one of my bosses, I introduced you to one of my bosses, he goes, dude, that's like the perfect wrestling name.
Yeah, you would have been. I didn't even think about that.
I freaked out. Okay, so you can find this gentleman at Eric Gorges. You can find him at, and this is the telltale sign, you're going to recognize him if you don't already, at Craftsman's Legacy. But what I think it's really cool is you can also find him at Voodoo Chopper. And also you can see his television show. It's on YouTube. But I first started watching all these episodes on PBS. And I thought that was the funniest thing when I first met you. Remember?
Yeah, I sure do, man. I was excited to meet you.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if you quite remember this because I always get to trade shows wicked early to set up. I'm a major preparer. Yeah. And I'm getting my coffee there in the common ground. There's nobody in there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, as I pour my coffee, out of the corner of my eye, I see this wicked tall guy coming over. And I'm like, who is this guy? And you were with a lady, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. And
I was with Liz from Woodcraft.
Yeah, and you stuck your hand out and you went, Sedge, it's a pleasure to meet you. And I went, okay, someone knows me. And I'll never forget, Eric, I'm shaking your hand. And I went, I had my coffee. And I went, oh, snap. And I recognized you. And I go, and I wouldn't let go of your hand. I kept going, my wife loves you. Because her and I watch your program. We DVR it. We've watched it, and we just think it is such a unique program. It's awesome. It really touches our hearts, and the way you go about it, and it's just amazing. And then you didn't want to talk about that. You wanted to talk about Festool, and I was like freaking out. And I thought it was so cool. I automatically selfied. I send it to my wife, and she goes, "Oh man,
yeah." So, it's a blessing. You know, it's a blessing to be able to do the show. It's a blessing to be able to meet people and spend time with people. And you know, I'm a lifelong student, you know what I mean? I love learning things.
Yeah, and,
I've been watching, you know, I recently got introduced to Festool, and I had a couple of tools, and so I started watching your videos more and more and more and more, and then I saw you there, and I was like, oh my God, it's Sedge. I want to go say hi to him, you know what I mean? So <that's> cool.
By the way, that's one of the first times I had gotten called out. Someone recognized me. It sounds funny. And here I am shaking your hand going, oh my God. So I just want to, before we get started, I just want to mention something. I got home a couple days later and Marianne's my wife. And she said, what's he like? And I go, what do you think he's like? She goes, well, he seems so cool on that program. I go, he is cool. He's the nicest gentleman you ever want to meet. And he is so passionate about what he does. And I just, it shows. And I'm one of your biggest fans. And here I am shaking.
That's really kind of you.
Oh my God. So let's get started here. I have a few questions. And I know everybody's listening and will continue to listen and watch, but this is more for me, I think, because I got to know you a little bit, and hopefully over the years we can get to know each other a little bit better. But how did you come about getting started? And I think it all started working with Choppers, right? First, Voodoo Choppers.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give you the short story of it. Originally, I was in IT, right? I worked at Xerox. I worked for Xerox Corporation, and I started there in my teens as a stock boy. And I just was literally, I was there, like, I was at the right place at the right time. I love learning. I was heavy, heavy into computers and Unix and programming. And, you know, while I was at that company, they were transitioning from an analog environment to a digital environment. And that was my game. You know, like I knew all the front ends were all Unix based, and I knew that system and the operating language really well. So I quickly rose into a technical position at the company, and I was traveling a lot, and it was crazy, dude. Cause like, I didn't have any college education at all, but I knew the language and I was super familiar with everything. So nobody cared, you know, like I was in meetings all over the place in these huge companies and nobody really cared. I got sick during that time and, you know, my life changed. My whole life changed. Everything about me changed. And a friend of mine said, you know, if you could do anything with your life and you didn't have to worry about money, you didn't have to worry about skills, what would you do? And I was like, I'd work with my hands. I didn't even think twice about it. And he goes, what would you do? How would you work with your hands? I'd say, well, I'd either go deep into woodworking or I'd go into metalworking and build motorcycles. And he was like, I think you should look at doing that. And that's how it started. You know, I was like, I really thought about going into woodworking because I grew up around woodworking. But I had a passion for motorcycles. I loved riding motorcycles and I wanted to be able to build a motorcycle from scratch, you know? And so that's how it all started, man. I resigned from Xerox and took an apprenticeship as a metal shaper and never looked back.
Huh. That's cool. You had the ability to apprentice with a metal shaper. And then you knew the inklings or the workings of choppers and motorcycles. So you just went from there, right?
Yeah. You know, I was a hands-on guy, you know, ever since I was a little boy, I was a hands-on person. You know, my dad and my granddad, they would always encourage me and teach me in the shop and show me how to do things. And my dad was really, really a hands-on guy. You know, he had a mechanical abilities and woodworking abilities. And, you know, he was one of those guys, like he had no fear in anything. It didn't matter if he knew how to do it, he'd figure it out. And yeah. So I that's how I learned. I saw that. And I thought that was just normal. I thought everybody was like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh no, I know. Growing up in Maine, if you're not a woodworker, you're an outcast.
Yeah.
You know? And he just said, oh, like Marianne asked me, my wife, oh, you know how to build that? I go, yeah, doesn't everybody?
Yeah.
Right? And that's how my business started. That's how my cabinet business started. I just started building stuff for people. Okay, so if I get this right, you started apprenticeship. And then how did you make that jump? Did you go right into your own business?
Yeah, I started an apprenticeship. And then I had started, like, I was already doing motorcycle repair work and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, fixing bikes for myself and working on friends' bikes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I knew ultimately that was the goal I had, was to start a company that handmade motorcycles. I started a business. I had, you know, I didn't really have any money or anything like that, and got a loan for $20,000 and bought some equipment, got a commercial space. I started the shop in my garage at the time at my house.
Yeah.
And we ran there for about a year And then I had grown out of that space and, wow. you know, rented a commercial space. And then, you know, it's been 23 years now. What is this? Is this 22 or? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was 99. So yeah, that's 23 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. So where do your clients, come from? Just referral or?
It's pretty much all referral these days. You know, and we've been so blessed with that, man. You know, I've traveled all over the place in the motorcycle space. You know, we did all kinds of stuff. We did some discovery shows and we did a lot of rallies and, you know, I used to travel a lot and we do like tons and tons of rallies every year. And then over the years that sort of waned back. I enjoy traveling a lot. I love meeting people, but, you know, flipping t-shirts and it's a hard way to make a living. Even when you're doing appearances, you know, you'd be paid to go to a rally but you're still like, you know, you're not in your shop making what you should be doing. You're, you know, hawking shirts and stuff like that. And it's like, is that really what I want to do? You know?
Right.
Oh, so cool. We just dialed that back, you know, and then now we turn away more work than we bring in, you know, because now I got the wood shop and the metal shop and the production company and everything else. So my time in the metal shop isn't like it used to be. You know, I'm not in the metal shop 12 hours a day anymore. If I get, you know, 4 or 5 hours in the metal shop a day, that's a good day for me. So,
wow.
I'm just a lot more selective about the work that we do. And I honestly, to tell you the truth, bro, you learn so much, right? And one thing that I've really learned is that I am not for everybody. And I tell that.
Yeah.
So when I meet somebody, when somebody comes in the shop or they call us on the phone or email or whatever, we go through a pretty lengthy interview process where, you know, we might have like 3 calls just talking about each other and what you got in mind and everything. And then sometimes I'll tell people, I'm like, you know, dude, I'm going to be honest with you. You are not going to enjoy this process. I am not a fast builder. I'm super slow because I pay attention to every single little detail. And I don't care about your timeline. Like I'm going to get it done as quickly as I can for you. But if I'm not happy with it, I'm going to sit on it. And, you know, if I make something and a week later, I think, you know, I think that needs to look differently. I'm going to redo it, you know, because that's how it should be. You know, that's
it, yeah.
I don't know, man. It's just so I'm not afraid to tell people like, hey, you're just not going to you're going to be upset with me the whole time. And that's not good for you. It's a lot of money, dude. Find somebody that you're going to enjoy the process with and that's going to build, you know, along your expectations as far as that goes, you know?
Yeah. And you want to build for those people who are wicked appreciative and understand that that you have to put your name on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's very important. You know what I mean? Like I don't put my name on things that I don't want my name on. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
if that makes sense, like if I'm not proud of it, then I redo it, you know, and until I am proud of it. And, you know, it doesn't happen a ton. You know, I'm probably over exaggerating that fact, right? It's not like, you know, I spend 40 hours or 60 hours building a fuel tank and then I'm like, oh, I don't like that. You know, you sort of see it a lot farther along earlier in that path. You know what I mean? And
sure.
That's just how it is.
Sure. No, totally. Totally. I built for a living and I know that feeling. There's sometimes when I walked out of the house, I knew I wasn't going to accept whatever when I sent a bid, I wasn't going to accept it. I was going to avoid that customer because I knew they were going to they weren't going to let me do what I needed to do, but also I knew they would be a pain.
So I just, you know, I cut to the chase and I just tell them straight up, like, dude, I, you know, it's just not a good fit for us, man. You know, like you'll, there's somebody out there that's going to be a much better fit for you, and your money's going to be well spent on them, because with me, you're going to be super frustrated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as I get older, right, my skill set gets better, but I've slowed down. I haven't gotten faster at building. I've gotten slower because I pay attention to every little thing, you know?
And
the biggest kick for me is, like, you know, you deliver a bike to somebody, and then like 6 months later, they hit you up and they're like, dude, I just saw how you did this. Oh my God. You know? And that's like, that's the best thing. You know, it took that amount of time for them to see the attention to detail, you know?
And I love it when I had a really appreciative client, right?
Yeah.
Because that's such a good pride that you have. Like, oh man, my baby is going in their hands. And it's a good feeling.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. You know, this feels pretty good, because I always watch you ask the questions. Okay. Why or how did a Craftsman's Legacy come about?
So, you know, while we were doing shows and traveling and stuff, you know, I had met so many people that were really gifted, you know, and they did things that most people wouldn't really know, you know, like you wouldn't necessarily know that there was somebody doing this craft out there. And I thought, man, that'd be a really cool show. And, you know, just went from there, dude. Like, literally, I didn't know anything about television production or how to do that, how to make a TV show, how to pitch a TV show. I didn't know anything about that. But I had done a couple, like, I was a guest on other shows a couple times, and I met different producers and stuff. So I started reaching out to them, and it took years, though, dude. I mean, like, the very first development of that show was like 2010, 2012 timeframe is when I was doing all the background on it and stuff. And then it took years to like sort of figure it out. And then, you know, we decided like PBS was the right move for us. And, you know, I'm a sort of a reserved person, especially on television. You know, I'm not a jackass running around making noise and screaming.
Yeah.
And I didn't want the show to be that. And,
right.
So there was a lot of like, well, a lot of people were like, well, you can't do a national show. You can't pull it off. You're not, you don't have it or whatever. And I'm like, well, I don't understand it. I think unless it's something I can't change about myself, I can learn. Right.
Yep. But, yep.
So yeah, there was a lot of that, you know, we just put it together, but it took time, man, and a lot of different people, a lot of different friends and mentors. Yeah. And, you know, I learned a lot in a period of time, you know, and then eventually just started my own production company.
That's so cool. And I mean, in your travels, you met these people, probably wrote down their names, and you went back and said, hey, you want to be on the program? Or do you want to do an episode, or do they come to you, or do you have somebody go out and search out craft people, or how does that work?
So season one was probably the most difficult casting season in that regard, right? Because we were really tight-lipped about it. Everything was, you know, we had everything trademarked and all that lawyer crap was taken care of. But, you know, prior to us publicly announcing the show, which we did, like, the show launched, the first episode broadcast in like September. We didn't publicly announce it until August, I think.
Wow.
Or July. And like, literally, dude, the day before, you couldn't find anything online about the show or the series. I was really pretty strict about that fact, right? Because like, when you're building a brand, And I learned a lot from Voodoo, right? When you're building a brand, you have one time to make that announcement, right? Like your presentation of the brand is in your control.
Yeah.
So you have that ability to hold that in and try to control and regulate how it's publicly announced, or, you know, you just do this spray and pray pattern where, you know, everybody and their brother on the crew is putting out behind the scenes stuff and all this other stuff. And you really lost control of how that brand is being announced to the world. Right. So right. I was really strict about that with people, and, you know, everybody on the crew knew about it. And, you know, we made a point very early on, you know, honestly, we didn't tell anybody my involvement of the show. Like, even a lot of the crew at first, they just thought I was a hired host, you know?
Wow.
And we made it a point not to tell our craftsmen or our guests. That's always strange because we're technically the guests in their space, but they're a guest on the show. Yeah. So I never know how to say that, but because I didn't want anybody to feel funny or weird, you know what I mean? And I really want people to feel comfortable and natural and, you know, think I'm, you know, just a bozo. I'm fine with that.
You know what I mean? Welcome to my world as well.
Yeah, dude, you know, like, it's not about anything about me. It's about these people, you know, and that's exactly what the show needs to be about, you know?
Yeah. And what I really like about it is you're in there interviewing, but you're in there making something. You're building something with everybody. And you, in other words, you get your hands dirty, which is so cool because it just comes across like, wow, he's doing it with them. He's learning from them, which is incredible. And I think more people need to teach. So I'm going to call one episode. I think it was season one. You did a fantastic job interviewing John Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And what's he world renowned for? His shaker boxes,
shakers,
right?
Shakers, yeah.
And I'm an incredible shaker furniture nut. I love it. That's what I build for my home. And what was really cool, and it kind of blew me away, is that you didn't make a shaker box. I thought you were going to make a shaker box.
Yeah.
You made a hand plane, and I thought that was so cool. And you could see his passion. You brought out his passion for woodworking. It was incredible. I said, I think you have a gift to bring out the best in people, Eric.
Oh, thanks, man.
It's fantastic. Okay, so now, what do you get to keep all this stuff?
So sometimes, it'll be presented as a gift, right?
Okay.
Sometimes I'll buy it, you know, or compensate them for it. Some of that I have in my office. Some of it I've given away as gifts to people. So it's all over the board, you know. Like some stuff I can't afford it. You know, it's like so expensive, and I just can't afford it. You know, But yeah, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they gift it to me, and it's so nice, you know, so it's amazing. It's amazing.
Did you get to keep that hat?
The hat? Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so cool, but I never knew what goes in to creating a custom hat.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible. And it's kind of like people don't know what it goes into building a chopper or building building out a kitchen. You know, they don't understand all of that. They don't understand about building a small occasional table. They think you just throw it together. And that's the beauty of the show. You see that, like the guy who makes the fly rods and all of that. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, you know, and the whole point of doing that, what we call the apprenticeship section of the show, was really not, it wasn't a situation where I wanted to learn. I love learning and I love working with everybody, but it was really truly meant to be more of an inspirational guide for people, right? Like I would have so many people write me and say they want to get into building motorcycles or they want to learn metal shaping. And I would talk to them and I'd say, well, what are you doing? You know, well, I want to learn it. Right, but what are you doing for yourself? Like, don't hang your hat on me, dude. Like, you know, you got to take the reins, you know, and go to the library, get some books, you know, start researching, start talking to people. And that was the idea behind this, was like, hey, I'm coming in. I've never done this before, but I'm willing to learn it. And that's what it takes. You got to get in there and you just got to do it. Whether you know what you're doing or not, eventually you'll find somebody, pardon me, who will help you. You know, the one great thing about people is people oftentimes want to help other people, you know?
Yes.
And craftsmen are really, you know, there's this idealism, right? That I follow, you know, I have no right to die with this knowledge.
Yes.
You know, you have to teach other people. You have to give back to whatever it is you're learning, whether you're in college learning, you know, doing medical stuff or lawyer stuff or whatever kind of stuff. You know, you have a responsibility to share that knowledge and to give back to it, you know, add to that knowledge base in the cloud, right? Or whatever, energy, or whatever you want to call it, right? But you have a responsibility to make sure that other people can learn that too, because they're going to carry it forward and they're going to keep it alive and they're going to add to it. And there's going to be more masters, you know, and more amazing things out in the world.
Yeah. There's a powerlifting company that I really like. They're out of Columbus, Ohio, and one of their mottos is live, learn, and pass it on. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's what you want to do. And Gary Katz says it two ways. He says, honor your craft, but also pass on the knowledge. And that's what I've worked. When I was in Fort Lauderdale, I would be on a job site and somebody says, oh, I'm not going to teach you how to do that because then you're going to steal my job. No, teach people your craft because you want it to live on.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy sometimes. Okay. So out of all the shows so far, all the episodes, for you, what was the most taxing build or piece that you made that really you thought might have pushed you?
Oh, boy. There's a lot of them, dude. Like, you know, Curtis Buchanan, the chair maker. That guy is so incredible. You know, David Ricardo, the engraver. I mean, everybody, every single one of them, right? Like, right, there's like, if we did something around metalworking, I already came in, you know, knowing some things, right? I already had a base knowledge, right? But you know, so many of the things I had no idea, like quilting, right? Like, I've never used a sewing machine before in my life, you know, all of this stuff, you know. Even when we were doing the sand casting, you know. Up in Nellis Studios. You know, I'd never done anything like that before. But it was just truly wonderful. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah. And so when I was a kid, I told this on a shop talk. When I was a kid, I was 12, and I took a summer class from craft school in Lewiston, Maine. And it was a pottery class.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And I learned the whole process and I built several things over the years. Over that summer. And now I know what it takes. And I collect pottery. My wife and I love beautiful pottery.
That's
cool.
And
that is such a craft of spinning. And what's funny, my first piece I ever made, my sister has it. It's her ashtray. And
perfect.
She doesn't smoke.
Yeah.
I made her an ashtray, you know?
Yeah. I get it, man.
It's just I love learning something new like that. I think that's why I'm drawn to your show. Okay. Go ahead.
If I could just quickly say, you know, like,
oh no, take your time.
You know, you think about this, right? And I've given a couple of motivational talks before, and one of the first things I always open with is this idea, right? This principle. Most of us have been through, you know, grade school. And when you're 8 years old or you're 7 years old or wherever, you know, and in class, you're making all this stuff. You know, you're making Mother's Day cards and Father's Day cards and ash. Well, they don't do ashtrays anymore, but you know, you get the point, right? You're making these things, you know, and the glitter's out and the glue's out. And man, everybody is just digging it. You know, you're so excited. Christmas time, you want to give that noodle necklace to your ma so bad. You know, because you're doing it in October because the schools, you know, they're really organized. And you cannot wait till Christmas. You're so excited, right? And you're passionate about this. You're like, you put everything you had into that. And I'm like, you know, that was in you when you were a kid. That's still in you, man. That is still in you. You just got to find it. You got to unlock that key. You buried it down growing up and taking on responsibility and life. Just beat it down, right? But it is still in you. And it's like that, man. Every time I work with somebody, I see that passion, and I am totally like that 8-year-old kid. You know, I'm just like, dude, where's the glitter? Where's the glue? You know, I want to get in there, you know? And it's so exciting. For me, it is. It's just like, I don't know.
You just got, because I made that noodle necklace, and I was damn proud of it.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah, man. And you know, and those are the gifts, right? And that's what we don't think about as often today, especially like, you know, you go online, you can order something, have it at your door in a couple of hours. You know what I mean? But we don't think about that, right? We don't think about like, oh, I need a card for, you know, Valentine's Day's coming up. I need a card for my honey. So instead of like, just taking some paper, folding it up and doing something goofy, a little heart or squirrel or whatever. You know, we go out to the store, we spend $8 on a card, you know, blah, 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 blah. But those cards, nobody keeps those cards. The cards that you spent time with and you put together, man, those cards are cherished, man. When my mom passed, we found all that stuff. All that stuff, all the noodle necklaces, the ashtray I made for my mom. All that stuff she still had, man. I had long forgotten about it, but it meant to her, you know? And
Oh yeah.
And that's what life's about, brother, you know?
That's what life's all about. I make a card for my wife's birthday every year.
Good for you.
And by the way, that's all she keeps. All the other, I shouldn't say this because maybe some of our relatives are listening, you know, the kids. She doesn't keep ours.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I don't mean to break hearts here, but it's the truth, man. You know, I don't know. I'm sure people keep them, but you know,
you've really made me think. Yeah. Everybody's got that inner kid that wants to create, huh?
They sure do. They sure do. I believe that, man. And I love it when people tell me they're like, well, I don't have a creative stitch in my body. I don't believe that, man. I don't believe that. I think you've lost maybe where that is hidden, but I guarantee it's in there somewhere. Right?
So
I tell you one thing.
That is so cool.
We weren't put on this earth to hoard money and buy nice stuff and just, you know, there's more to life. So make some cards, man. Yeah. Valentine's is right around the corner, right? Like, perfect time, man.
There's a local guy here, kind of local here in Indiana. I met him down at Mark Adams, and then he came to all the end user classes. His name is Derek. And at Mark Adams, he told me something that just resonates in my head all the time. It was so profound. He has several patents. He's an eye doctor, pilot. There's nothing that this guy hasn't done. And he's in his 80s, and he said to me, he goes, my mom told me something when I was a kid. He goes, to not use your hands and your creativity is not to enrich your humanity.
No, yeah, that's well said.
And it resonates in my head. And when he came to class here at Festool, I was just like, you know how much that got me? He goes, oh, I know. this guy, everybody I know who met him has been touched by him. He's such a great guy. Okay. I didn't want to gush on too much. Okay. Now, I got to say it because I received a gift from you after I met you.
Yeah.
And Rick and I read this book because Rick's my buddy here and you sent this to us. And this is an amazing book, everybody. I'm not trying to promote it, but I guess I am because I think everybody should read this book.
Thank you.
The Craftsman's Legacy by Eric Gorgias. And how did this, I know how the book came about, but how did
why did you write it? What compelled you to write it? Because you share a lot in here.
Yeah, I do. You know, I always had envisioned writing a book, right? But to be honest with you, I figured it was something I'd do later in my life. And one of our EP, our executive producers on the show, had run into a publisher or an agent or something like that and pitched the book idea to them because she knew that I had wanted to write a book one day. And we had a call with him. He liked the idea. We had a call with him and he told me, he goes, listen, I think this is a great idea for a book. I'm not your guy, but I want to help you, you know, find a publisher for it. And that started us on that journey, right? Like, he gave us a list of agents, literary agents. And we interviewed a bunch of agents. And then I found a literary agent out of New York. And they, you know, believed in the book and they loved the idea and the messaging behind it. And then, you know, they said, well, are you going to write it? And I said, no, I don't think you want me to write it. Like, I'm not very well spoken and I curse a lot and I don't think people would enjoy it. So we, she goes, all right, well, we'll get you a ghostwriter. And then we interviewed ghostwriters and found John, and John and I clicked, pretty quickly. And then we just wrote it. And, well, it was licensed before Algonquin bought the publishing rights to it before we wrote it. So yeah, that's how it went. It was super cool. Exciting. You know, it was like another one of those things, right? Like I didn't know how to run a motorcycle shop or build a motorcycle from scratch or start a TV show. And I didn't know how to write a book either, but I learned, you know, and you figure it out, got people helping you.
Yeah, man, that's cool. Just go for it. Right.
Yeah. And then we did the audio book and, you know, I got to record the audio book. That was super cool. And yeah, you know, it was awesome.
No, I love reading it. It took me about, cause I'm not a good reader, and it took me about 6 months to read.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I read it in a couple of days. It's awesome. Yeah. I couldn't put it down. I'm just like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Thank you. That means a lot to me.
Oh, it is. It's true. Hey, okay. So it's funny. I always get a kick out of this. I go, maybe I should ask him a best tool question.
Yeah, sure, man. I love my best tool, man. I love the tools.
Hey,
super happy.
And this will transition into a little bit of that, but
okay,
man, I know you grew up as a woodworker, you know, with your folks and everything, but you're doing a lot of stuff with wood now, mm-hmm. right? You have it looks like that woodworking business, right? And it seems like it's a platform that has you're teaching people and doing build projects on your YouTube channel. How did that transition in from like a Voodoo Choppers into your wood shop? And maybe I'm asking too many questions too quick, but how did that happen?
No. So, again, it was like one of those things. I Voodoo was up and running and, you know, we were stable and whatnot. And I knew I wanted to get back into woodworking eventually. So, you know, I just started getting involved with it. And, we talked with Woodcraft early on, and actually we talked to him about Craftsman's Legacy, you know. And during those discussions, I mentioned that, you know, I was really interested in getting into woodworking again and building out a wood shop, and that was my intent, was to build a full woodworking shop.
Wow.
I said, you know, I enjoy watching videos on woodworking and seeing the pictures and stuff like that. But much like the show, right? You see the mastery of it, right? You see somebody that they've spent 20 years learning how to carve. They've spent 20 years building cabinetry or fine furniture or whatever the case is. You don't see day one. You don't see that process
of
discovery, right? And failure. Yeah. And I said, That's what we want to do, right? Like you said, we teach other people. Well, you know, honestly, I'm not in a position to teach other people woodworking. I've only been really heavy into it now for probably 5 or 6 years again, meaning I'm in my wood shop usually every night for a couple hours, and then pretty much every weekend I'm in my wood shop. But I don't have that skill set to teach people, man. So I teach through my failure.
Yeah.
And that's what we show on our YouTube videos is like, hey, I'm going to do this. I don't necessarily know what I'm doing, but I'm going to show you, and I'm going to call out every single mistake I've made along the way. If I've, you know, busted a tool, if I've broken a router bit, if I've, you know, misdrilled, whatever the case is. And believe me, I've made all kinds of mistakes. But we show that, and hopefully, you know, people watch it and they're like, oh, okay, I really like to try that, but I'm going to keep that in mind. And hopefully they don't make the same mistake. So I don't think of it as like, I'm going to show you how, you know, I've mastered the skill of cabinetry because I'm nowhere near that, but I really like making things. And my skill set is getting a lot better, you know, like, I'm a lot better woodworker today than I was 5 years ago. You know what used to screw me up in the beginning, and I still have trouble with it, right? I'm used to working in thousands, right? If I'm machining something, I'm working in thousands all the time, and that's how I read numbers all the time. Everything's a thousands. You know, it's 250, 500,000. You know, whatever the case is, right? And so then I come into woodworking and I'm doing dados and some joinery like that. And I've got calipers out, you know, and I'm measuring everything out. And then I go to put it together and I'm like, what the Christ? Like, this just fit like yesterday. And today it's not, you know, and I'm like, oh my God. And then, you know, the normalization of scales in woodworking, right? Well, 3/4 ply, you know, that's nowhere near 3/4, right? Nope. That's like 720. Okay, that's nowhere near 3/4. It might as well be, you know, 680, right? It might as well be 1/2 inch. I mean, you call it 3/4, and it's not 3/4. It's not even 18 mil. It's, you know, and it's like, that took me a long time to get that around my head, because I would like, I'm working, all right, 1/2 to 3/4, you know, and you blow it 3/8, you know, and then I'm like, well, that's not on center. And, God, dude. So, that was a struggle for me, man.
That's pretty cool. You're taking people along for the journey as your learning journey, and that's really cool. My dad always taught me, man, make plenty of mistakes, but make sure you learn from those mistakes, you know? So the best videos I see on YouTube or wherever, Instagram, wherever, is people who are making mistakes but are willing to share how that mistake happened and this is how they solved it, right? Yeah, I just recently did a training. I think it was yesterday morning with a gentleman. He won our sweepstakes, and I trained him for an hour. But in his thing, he said, Sedge looks like he's made a lot of mistakes in his life. Okay, yeah. I, the way I look at it, I go, yeah, I made a lot of mistakes and also a lot of woodworking mistakes. He goes, and when I talked to him yesterday morning, it was wonderful because he was in the trades and he was having hiccups with his domino. And he goes, oh my God. He goes, I was doing this and this. I go, I know. Guess what? I used to do that. And I'm always trying to, when I teach people, is I want to teach them about the mistakes I made. And I don't want you to make mistakes, but guess what? You're going to leave here or we're going to walk away. You can still make those mistakes, but now you know the solution, right?
And that's what it's all about, right? Like when I was an apprentice shaper, my mentor, Ron Fournier, you know, I would screw something up and he would say, I'll show you how to fix that. And he would say, I was really hard on myself. He'd say, the only difference between you and I is I know how to fix the mistakes. Mm-hmm. That's our difference.
Yep.
I've got a lot of time into it. I know how to fix the mistakes because I've made them, you know?
Yep.
And I used to teach metal shaping and like flame welding aluminum and things like that. And I loved teaching, not only from the standpoint that I got to share my knowledge, but I also learned so much because, you know, somebody would get themselves in a position that, oh man, I've never jacked up something this bad before. And then you have to figure out how to step back and fix it. You know? So I would learn so much from it. You know what I mean? And it was just super cool.
Yeah. My mentor, Ralph, he's the ultimate finisher, and I learned all my finishing from him, but he also repaired a lot of furniture. And he goes, one time I looked up on the shelf, I go, Ralph, what's Bondo doing here in your shop? And he goes, come over here. The furniture movers racked this desk. He goes, you see this? And he drew out a big corner of the desk like this. He goes, that's Bondo and you can't see it. So you're going to learn from the mistakes that everybody makes. I know how to fix anything. He had that confidence level, and that's who I wanted to learn from.
That's the way to do it, man.
Kudos to your channel. You're teaching right.
Thank you.
Okay. So I know you have some fest tool.
Yeah.
What's the first fest tool you ever got? You remember?
Yeah, I sure do. It was the 150 sander. I got the sander and I got the VAC, the 36 VAC.
Yeah. And
so, dude, I'll tell you this really fast. I bought that and then and I immediately fell in love with it. And I'll tell you why I fell in love with it. I've spent thousands of hours with pneumatic tools in my hands, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, that the vibration that comes from using those tools, I recognize that because it beats up on your hands after a while. And when I first plugged in that tool, that Fest tool sander, and I started using it, and I was like, this is a well-built machine. The vibration is minimal on it. When you stop it and set it down, it stops. There's no drag on it, you know, and it's just incredibly well-built. And the vacuum system around it, I was so impressed with that, dude. I think that week I went back to the Woodcraft store and bought another sander. I bought the boom arm, and then I was like drinking the green Kool-Aid, as they say, right? Like I was all in. Now I have a pretty good army of festool tools in my shop, but you know, I call them my inside tools. I don't take them when I do outside projects and landscaping and all that kind of stuff. I don't use my festool outside because I don't want it to get damaged. I like to take care of my tools, you know?
Cool. Hey, you have a track saw?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the 55.
Yeah, that was my first tool.
Was it?
And yeah, back in 2004, it was really funny. It was, I'll tell you, it was $430. They couldn't sell me the sand. They couldn't sell me the dust extractor. And I walked out of there and I just went, nah, I ain't going to buy it. And then something came up. And I went back because the guy showed me something on it. I said, okay, let me go. And it was amazing. And it sounds funny because it's kind of a similar story. About after that, about five or six weeks later, I went and dropped another like 5-6K on Festool. Because I said, yeah. if this saw has saved me so much daggone time, oh my God. And then I fell in love with the sanders and I had to get a job at Festool after that, you know. It changed so much in my shop, and I had a huge shop, but it changed so much, and I was so impressed with it. But then you come work for the company, and the company's even more impressive. Okay, you use social media a lot.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. I always lump YouTube in there with social media as well because it is a social environment. A lot of people research on there. How do you use it? What do you use it for? Is it just to bring people there and then you tell me.
You know, to be honest with you, dude, I feel it's something I struggle with, to be completely honest, because I don't post five times a day. I don't post three times a day. I post when I think it's something that people might find interesting. So it might be once a day. It might be, you know, I might post for like 3 days straight and then you won't hear from me again for 2 days or 3 days again. You know, yeah. I'm just not in that world, you know, and I don't take a lot of pictures of myself or have me in a lot of pictures and stuff like that. I just like, hey man, I'm doing this and you might think this is sort of cool, you know? And so I try to take those pictures and, you know, we had, a social person on staff with us at one time. And she worked for the production company and that was awesome, dude. Cause there was like consistency to everything we posted and that was great. And I'm not that person. I don't post super consistently and I'm not really good at it, but I try and put stuff out there that I think people would enjoy. You know, I don't know what else to say. I don't think I've ever posted a picture of something I'm eating, but I dig those pictures too. That's just not me, man.
I totally agree. Festool Sedge was kind of a mistake, an experiment. I started it it'll be 5 years, March 17th. I had to start it on a day I remember, right? Wow. St. Patty's Day. And I stumbled and fumbled through it, but I wanted to bring the training platform in bite-sized segments. And that's why I did it. And I'm not on Instagram all the time. I'm on there 3 days a week just to post that to do a training. And I love it. And that's how I use it here at Festool. And it's fun, but I'm not the guy who does a story every 10, 15 minutes, you know? Maybe it's my age. I don't know, but I think it's a killer platform because I know so many people out there that I have taught on how to use their tools. And it's one guy said, dude, you're the best Festool owner's manual I've ever met.
That's a great description for you, man. That's awesome.
I love passing it on and teaching people. So I always wonder how people use social media. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. I was just going to say, there's some of those tips that you do where, you know, I've had the tool for a couple of years and I had no idea, you know, I'm like, oh, that's going to make my life a lot easier now, you know, and it's probably in the manual, right? Because the manual is sitting in a binder with all the other manuals that I don't read.
It's an easy way to access information. Like YouTube, I love YouTube because it's, and we started Festool Live and now this Shop Talk, this will live on there. I dig it because it almost seemed like at one time we were keeping Festool training a secret and we should have never done that. So I'm really proud of it and we've used it. And I'm not the social media guy here. You know, I'm a trainer and I've had a hoot with it. It's fun. Hey,
well, you're doing a fabulous job at it, man.
I've learned from you. You're so good at what you do. How did the pandemic affect your business? Did it affect your business? I know I had to change my notes here because I said, what got you through 2020? Now I got to say, what got you through 2021? You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. Did it affect my business? Not really, to tell you the truth. It affected our show schedule because season 5 was supposed to launch a year before it did. So, like, we didn't travel. I'm sort of a hermit to begin with, right? Like, I go between the two shops, and that's about it, man. And, you know, my dog Buddy goes everywhere with me. The biggest impact that I had with it was like, I couldn't see my daughter. At first I didn't see my daughter for like 5 weeks or something, which really bothered me. And that was really unsettling for me, but I keep to myself most of the time. And anyways, you know what I mean? I like working alone and, you know, I'm blessed with two very nice shops you know, some land and I can just sort of, I could stay here and enjoy it. I don't really go out much to begin with. So, you know, man, it's an incredible time and horrible time, but As far as my business goes, I just went to work, stayed away from people.
Here at Festool, thank God, Derek, Chris, Philip, and I, and Minnie, and Brent, we started Festool Live because that's what got us through the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right? Derek's right in the room with me, and he's shaking his head because it is. I'll just brag about Festool. We were never, ever shut down.
That's awesome.
And it's amazing. It's just, the struggles of everything with supply chain, but everybody's going through that. And for me, with the pandemic, it was the unknowing of what's next, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the drag.
It's scary, dude. It hit close to my family, and that was horrible. I don't know how else to describe it. It's sort of a crazy time,
A crazy time.
It sure was, especially early on.
We didn't know what was going to happen. Nobody did.
No.
Hopefully everything's starting to look, seems like it's looking a little bit brighter. Numbers are coming down. Let's get away from this topic, eh?
I got you on that.
Yeah, I know. Because everybody listening live right now is going, yeah, we know what you guys are talking about. We're going through it with you.
Yeah.
Hey, don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I got a question for you.
We're all good, man.
Future growth expectations. How do you see it? Same old, or are you thinking of growing in different areas or?
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
I want to get further into woodworking and,
cool.
I think I'm going to start selling some things. I've sold some carvings and things like that I've done. We sold quite a bit of that and some turnings and things like that. But I really want to get into doing smaller items, smaller boxes and stuff like that, because you can't hide mistakes in that kind of detail. And that's where I want to go with my skill set. And then introduce metal into it, right? Like I've got
a
pretty strong metal background. So,
yeah.
I've been playing around with that a lot.
I don't know if it's phased out at all, but boy, it was hot about 2-3 years ago. The big slab tables with the iron bases, and that, those fabricated bases. Oh my God. I would just look at that. And my buddy here, Michael, he used to teach welding, and I really, really want to learn how to weld. And,
come and spend some time.
Really?
Yeah, come and spend a weekend with me, man. I'll have you welding. Oh, man. I'll have you TIG welding per se.
Okay. I'll take you up on that.
Yeah, anytime, dude. Seriously.
You're Detroit,
it's all
right?
About learning. Yeah, Detroit, yeah. And, cool. I've taught a lot of welding over the years, and my favorite form of welding is flame welding, oxyacetylene welding, and especially aluminum, because it's a difficult process,
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
You don't see any temperature change. There's no visual. The visuals on temperature aren't color related. They're texture related in aluminum. So it can be difficult and challenging for people.
Okay. So I'm going to end it on this one.
Yeah. Okay.
The $1 million question. Do you consider yourself a craftsman or an artist?
That's a good question, dude. That's a good question.
I got it.
I don't know. You want to know how that question came about?
Yes, please, because it rivets me, because everybody you ask that on your program, you see them thinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
It hits them like a ton of bricks. It hits me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. So for when we do every episode, I sit down the night before and I prep by myself. And I just start writing notes down, like, what do I want to know about this person? And with John Wilson, that was our first episode. It was one of the questions I had. How do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a craftsman or an artist? And, you know, the cool thing is that there's no right or wrong answer to it.
There isn't.
You know, you could call yourself whatever you want. And I would have people oftentimes say, oh, you're an artist, you know, with the motorcycles and stuff like that. And I still don't. Like, I'm not an artist. I don't see myself like an artist. I've always, to me, being a craftsman, that was a goal. To have somebody look at you as a craftsman, that was like, oh my goodness, like, you've really done something there, you know, to be called a craftsman or looked at like that. And that's where the whole question came from, was like, you know, how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a craftsman or an artist? And then it just sort of carried on from there. And now when we do the episodes, a lot more people know about us. And so a lot of times we'll get there and they'll say, you know, as we're prepping and we're getting ready for the interview, and they'll come up to me and they'll be like, I got to tell you, I've been thinking about this. I know you're going to ask me. I've been thinking about it for a week now. And I think I got a really good answer. I'm like, that's awesome, dude. I can't wait to hear it. You know, like, because some of the answers are so profound, you know, and some people are like, I don't know, I never thought about it, you know, and we just move on. So it's just, I think it's a fun question to ask, right?
It is. But,
I would like to consider myself a craftsman. I truly try to live up to that expectation of what that means in my mind, you know, and it's something I'm always striving for, right? But I think my business card actually says craftsman on it, now that I think about it.
Does it?
Yeah, I don't use them a whole lot, but I think we have these special cards that have my cell on it, and I think on there it says craftsman. It's got my maker's mark on it, and those don't get given out a whole lot, but I think it says craftsman on there. I have to look at it. I don't know.
I was told I have business cards. But what I think I hand out, if I ever hand out a business card, I just hand it out. I go, that makes really good shim stock.
Oh, they do. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and the cool thing is like, there's a pretty wide variety of stock selection on it. So you can get a business card that might be 3,000 thick, or you can get one that's like, you know, 12,000 thick. So they're pretty cool for that type of stuff, you know, and they're great for great scraping glue. And
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All that kind of stuff. They're fun for.
It's funny
how the world's changed.
Oh my God. It's completely changed. I actually, my business cards have a good stock thickness. I think I'm going to start using those as glue spreaders. I usually use hotel cards for glue spreaders.
Oh, I never thought about it. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Too. And you can cut them and you can get down the mortise.
You get
really
right
good and
there.
Create shapes. I ran across that when I was a lot younger, and you know, putting cope and stick together, rail and style, because you have that long tenon. And I would see people struggle with acid brushes. I just scoop it up and go, whoop, whoop, whoop. There's one, whoop, 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 on a credit card or hotel card.
Nice. I'll have to try that.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of those somewhere.
Yeah. I don't ever throw them away. They're my glue spreaders. All right. My friend, I thank you for your time.
Thank you, man. It was an honor.
It is an honor for us, from our Festool family. Thank you. This has been great. Eric, you're
thank
the bomb,
you.
Brother. Thanks. Dude.
Thank you. I'll see you soon,
you
brother.
You know it. All right. Talk to you later. Thanks.